Hi, my name is Jessica. I became a Baha'i in July of this year. There's no quick answer to what brought me here, but I started to reflect back on what led me here, what really led me here. A little background. This is a photo of my parents on their wedding day. I am half Japanese, half Russian. This is still the most epic wedding photo I've ever seen. My mom emigrated here from Japan, and my dad is a first-generation Russian-American. And this is me. I grew up in Los Angeles. I went to an extremely diverse private school where it was a melting pot of every ethnicity that you can think of. But somehow, in one of the biggest and most diverse cities in the world, I was bullied for my ethnicity by members of the Asian community that I grew up with for being mixed race. Some of the names thrown at me were white monkey, Asian wannabe, a bunch of names that I will not share today. But basically, I had that going on during the week, and then on the weekends, I had Japanese school, where I had the same thing, but I would say it was worse, because I didn't have other ethnic groups to lean on to be friends with. So I hid in the bathrooms during break, during recess, after school, until my dad came to pick me up. And then fast forward to high school, where suddenly it was exotic and hip and trendy to be mixed, and the same people who were calling me names were now asking me out on dates with no conversation in between. And my current life, where even now I've encountered people who have admitted to struggling in their perception of me because of the parts of me that are Asian, all the while being part of an industry that has told me maybe every other week that I'm nowhere near Asian enough to play Asian. So race. Even though it is so insignificant in one sense, and that it is literally the container that my body is in, it's that my parents grew up somewhere different than your parents or their ancestors did, it can be huge in that it can be how people see us, how they treat us, how they interact with us. So how does this all lead to God? Well, it leads to a journey of looking for a place where I feel like I'm really embraced, loved for me, all of me. Because no matter how much you try to kick these voices out of your head and you know they're not personal, my self-worth still took hits along the way. I didn't grow up with religion. I didn't grow up with conversations about God. I always prayed. I don't know where I got that from. Maybe I learned that from the movies. But I had this desire to deepen my spirituality that grew as I got older. And eventually, I had this collection of things that I tried on, religions that I tried on, spiritual modalities that had, but they never really fit and they never really stuck. And I had this basket of things that I used at my convenience, liked, kept what I liked, disposed of what didn't work for me, and I wasn't tied to anything. And that's exactly how I liked it. And then I met my first Baha'i. I don't know how to describe meeting this wonderful group of people in Los Angeles, except to say that it was like walking into a room full of vampires, but like the kindest vampires you've ever met. Like this, Robert Pattinson in Twilight, sparkling, shining, shimmering, lighting up forests with their energy. And I got to hear these writings and prayers that are the foundation of this faith. And even though at first I didn't always understand what they were saying, they resonated in this place that only truth does. And I witnessed this community and how they lived and interacted with each other. And what I kept seeing was this willingness to come back to these writings, this devotion to coming back to these principles of the faith. I saw women being honored and celebrated. The most paradigm-shifting part of this was seeing relationships and how, despite commercial success, that it can be so tempting and distracting for some people, putting relationship and God at the front of their lives. I saw people committing to service. I saw people following through with that. I saw discussions about race that were so honest. And most of all, I saw people that were willing to say, I have shame, I struggle, I have pain and darkness that hasn't been looked at, but please hold me accountable. I want to come back to the foundation of these writings. And for me, what I found in those writings that I loved and that felt so comforting to me was this principle that we are perfect exactly the way we are. Noble have I created thee, yet thou hast abased thyself. Rise then unto that for which thou was created. So I've created you perfect. Why would you bring yourself down from that? In a society where sometimes we are judged by the people we love most for our exterior and what they think we can offer them, I found comfort in a faith that said, let's drop what's not working. Here's how. We get back to love. Love me that I may love thee. If thou lovest me not, my love can in no wise reach thee. So God saying, love me so that I can love you. How can I reach you unless you reach out to me? It's this tunnel of communication that we use where love is the language. And if I don't extend my arm out, I can't receive that love. I put up a block. And ultimately, love is the only thing I have to offer. It's me saying, I trust you. Even when I'm scared, even when I'm hurting, even when I'm not sure, even when I'm not even sure that there is a God, and the newness and shininess of this new commitment can wear off, and this can feel like another obligation I've put on my plate, I come back to my commitment, which is to love. This last writing, and the place that it's from, The Hidden Words, this short collection of writings by Baha'u'llah, the prophet founder of the Baha'i faith, really accompanied me on my journey to becoming a Baha'i. So I want to close with this. All that is in heaven and earth I have ordained for thee, except the human heart, which I have made the habitation of my beauty and glory. Yet thou didst give my home and dwelling to another than me. So everything on heaven and earth has been given to us except this one place, the human heart, which is reserved for God. I have put achievements, people's opinions, sometimes an image of myself, sometimes nothing at all in this one place that is reserved for God. And the thought of me coming home to my own home and not being welcome or replaced or locked out broke my heart. And this self-worth piece that so many of us are trying to lock in, and we wonder why it keeps evading us. And I thought, for me, I can't lock this in until I take care of home. Home being the place where God lives. God being whatever that is to you, divine love, infinite intelligence, energy, all of it. If my home is empty, then it's always going to feel like something is missing, because it is. Nobody's home. And if my home is filled with something or someone else, then it's always going to feel shaky and uncertain, because those things move and they shift. And as they do, I'm going to feel like a puppet whose strings are being pulled. Some days will be good and some days won't. So when I question my worth, I come back to this and I say, well, if God lives here, then isn't that my worth? And that's not questionable. God's value is not up for debate. So this missing piece, this external search can never find, it's as internal as it gets. As I learn to love God, I learn to love myself. And maybe we're home the whole time. Maybe the home isn't empty. Maybe it's not filled with something else. But our perception that it is makes it seem that way. Maybe love is right under our noses, right in front of our face, and we just haven't been able to see it. I invite you, the next time you feel challenged by someone, whether it's because of something that you don't agree with, or maybe it's the color of their skin or something about the way they look is unfamiliar to you and it makes you feel uncomfortable, I invite you to look inside their home, where God lives. Maybe they can see you. Maybe they can feel you, see them for who they really are. And that journey to self-love, self-worth, and ultimately to God can be that much kinder.